same year that my youngest is born and we get the property in Invermere, I stopped drinking that year, right? And I always actually had a really great relationship with drinking. I had a lot of fun with it. I mean, I did my share of dumb stuff while I was doing it, but it was, you know, it was fine. It was good. But yeah, someone was quitting that I know. And so I'm like, hey, I'll quit with you for a year.
Welcome to the Calgary Sessions. This is episode number 106. I'm your host, Jeff Humphreys. Today's guest, I don't even know how to intro you. There's so many like weird connections from like GP Boys to Bragg Creek bike rides to all these weird moments. So anyways, name who you are.
Yes, my name is Graham Mathias. And who I am, I guess first and foremost, I'm Joey, Ellie, and Sam's dad. I guess I should say Christy's husband. I'm a physiotherapist by trade. I own a couple physiotherapy clinics. And then as of about 5 years ago, I'm a teetotaling founder of One for the Road Brewing.
Which is the cans that we see on the table here. They're actually in the shot. So
there's them.
Yeah. Quickly explain what the beer is.
So the beer is an all non-alcoholic craft brewing company, which was kind of born out of a necessity for self-serving.
So this will be the, this is why this is a cool show to actually like unpack the entire story. This is, you know, I feel like this is a good platform to actually just like get into it all, and which will be great for me to actually hear the story in depth or whatever depth you want to go to. So I've been looking forward to this one since you said yes. So
It's awesome. Well, I hadn't seen in much of your stuff prior to actually meeting you through Megan Shabak there. So then I went back and looked at some of your stuff, and it's I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, man. Thanks, Megan, by the way.
Yeah.
So yeah, you've seen a couple of these. So take it back as far as you want to go. Where you grew up, how you grew up, you know, what influenced you, whether it's people. Just kind of like get into it. So take it back as far as you want to go.
Yeah. So born and raised in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Pretty average upbringing, but a place that I think people are proud to be from. And I'm on that list too, proud to be from there.
It's definitely, you know, I got a bunch of Saskies in my life, and it's just, you feel it. You feel how proud it is to be from there. And for whatever reason, these Saskies stick together too.
It's interesting. And this is like, you know, we'll get into that when I came here, but this is like the natural progression for Saskies to go to Alberta and to go to Calgary. And there's so many, right? Sask grads all over the place. And it's that instant connection for sure. I don't know what it is. And I don't know if it's just that, you know, Saskatchewan's kind of like the underdogs, right? And so you kind of stick together. So it was good. It was a great place to grow up for sure.
Brothers, sisters?
Two brothers. I'm the middle. So appreciate if you tell me how special I am. No, I don't think I had any of the middle child syndrome, but it's you know, a pretty typical household, rowdy, rambunctious, and a lot of fun growing up for sure.
What were your mom and dad doing?
So my mom stayed home. She stayed home, took care of us, and which was more than a full-time job. My dad was he was a banker originally, and then started a restaurant. So he was an entrepreneur, and it was great. He had lots of freedoms, and it's probably part of what took me into being an entrepreneur for sure.
So what were you up to as a youngster? Like sports? Were you like, what was kind of like?
You know, it's interesting. And after seeing some of your shows, like so many like awesome high level athletes that have been really cool to listen to, and they talk about the importance of sport in their life, and. What was really interesting is that at no point in time was I a high achiever in sports, but it was just as important. Like it was a big deal, right? It got you that community. It taught you so many lessons. Being part of sports was great. So whether it was hockey through high school, started playing some rugby, just generally, those were the times you're just outdoor and active all the time, right? So it was just a big part of it. Like, it was everything you did from wake up in the morning, even if you didn't have sports that day, it was like get on your bike and go, right?
Different, isn't it?
It was different, man.
Because now you're a parent. I'm not a parent, but, you know, I see it, you know, whether my brother or sister's kids, but it's all different. Yeah. So you obviously being a dad.
Totally.
It's a way different experience.
It is, but I think my kids got a lot of that. right? Because it was like, go play kick the can. They're like, what's kick the can?
Oh, I love
I'm like,
that.
What do you mean kick the can? What's kick the can? Yeah, so yeah. Teach them kick the can, right? So they're pretty active. They're pretty active three for sure, right? Yeah, definitely different. And and the I always say, like, back in those days, your life kind of revolved around your parents' life and what is their life going to be, and this is what we're going to do. Whereas now, parenting is all about what can we do for our kid? How can we best do this? How can we? And it becomes managing. The parents' job becomes managing the kids instead of the kids' job living within the parents' life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
It's been different for sure. But yeah, that was his life back then. You just went and you like few at the. We spent lots of time at the lake up at Wasksu, northern Saskatchewan, all summer, which was great. And so you just go and you're outdoors and you're.
It's simple,
trouble,
right?
And yeah, and like, and trouble, like good trouble, but trouble,
you're
right?
You're pushing the boundaries.
Yeah.
Like going, like either hopping a fence that you shouldn't hop, or you know, just whatever it was, or just like pushing just a little.
My kids came in, they were still young, but they came in one night. We had some people over and there were some kids over and stuff. So they come running to the house and they're like, oh, we, you know, knocked on someone's door and ran away and now they're trying to find us. And I was like, what are you doing here? Like, don't come here, run away. They're going to come telling you, I'm going to find you, give you shit. You're going to go do it again. They got to learn those rules,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure.
And that's how you, yeah, awesome. Anyway, it's great. Great upbringing, great place to grow up. Yep. Still have a ton of friends from there. Still get together with them every year.
So what happens like junior high, high school? Is it pretty like typical? Are you working? Is it just like school, sports? Like what's happening?
Yeah, pretty typical. You know, dad owned his own business, so we would always help out there, whether we're washing dishes
like when,
or
how old whatever. Are you when you started the restaurant?
Like I was young. I was like 4.
Oh, wow. So like early.
So my whole upbringing. Yeah, totally. So
what was the restaurant?
Called Brothers Too. And he owned it with his brother and then he bought his brother out.
Okay. What'd they serve?
Like pizza place for the most part. Greek restaurant, right? But pizza place where like I get teased about, am I Greek? Like I got a Greek last name, but I'm like far removed, right? Mm-hmm. So.
this is the amount of, I know a handful of Greeks that from Saskatoon that have a heavy, heavy restaurant background.
It's a weird thing. And because we were so far removed, like we were, my dad was kind of on the outskirts. He knew all the restaurant owners, but it wasn't like we were part of that Greek community. So I'm the wrong guy to ask, but I know lots of them.
It's interesting, right? Like,
yeah, it totally is. Yeah. It's a weird thing, right? They all like wear gold chains and drive Mercedes.
Good living. Okay, so the restaurant. So you started working there early.
So, yeah, we'd work there, right? We'd wash dishes and do whatever. And then when we became 16, deliver pizzas and whatever. It was good. It was great.
Like a true family-run business.
Yeah. I mean, he had employees. He certainly didn't rely on just family. It was big enough. But we all played our part in there, for sure, which was fun. Probably gave us good lessons and, yeah.
Did you work through high school at the restaurant too?
Yeah, not a ton, but like infrequently, but I would like, you know, Friday nights or whatever. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Was it, what did it feel like working for, you know, at the family restaurant? Like, were you proud? Were you just like, it's just a job? No, did you fully understand what your dad was up to?
I don't think I liked it. I didn't like it. Mm. Yeah. I didn't like it. In fact,
the industry or just working for family?
Good question. Well, yeah, probably the industry itself. Like I didn't enjoy the work. I didn't go, oh, this is what I want to do and I'm going to take over dad's restaurant, right? Not a chance. Mm. You know, working for my dad was fine. Other than he wouldn't ask you when you want to work. He would just tell you, you know, somebody didn't show up, come in. Like, damn it. Anyway, so I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it either. Like I knew it and I appreciated the restaurant. It was a great restaurant. Yeah. Like it was good work for my dad. Mm-hmm. It was awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did really well with it. So
it's, cause the restaurant can either, it's interesting to say you didn't want to be a part of it. Cause I feel like there's some people that just, they would love to be in that spot. You know, they would come alive knowing that this is like the family restaurant that they have a chance to take over and run with.
Yeah. You know, I think my dad deterred it as well. I don't think he wanted any of us to take it over. He wanted him to have an exit plan and get out and be done with it. I don't think he thought it was a great lifestyle. Although, like, he did it for 30-odd years. Like, he mm-hmm. did it a long time, it yep. treated him well. But he, at no point was he like, yeah, I hope I can keep hang on to this and make mm-hmm. it a legacy, you know, mm-hmm. business for the family. So
why do you think that is? Did you, and sorry, the question before that is like, working in restaurants is a hard life. Weekends, yeah. evenings, like
long
it's,
nights.
Yeah. Did you yeah. notice that he was gone a large amount of the time?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Right. And he was around, he'd come to our sports yep. stuff. He coached some years and stuff like this. But it was, you know, as a little kid, you'd be up watching cartoons in the morning and dad would come home from work. You're like, wow, my dad works hard. Mm-hmm. But maybe those are long nights after yep. work, right?
For too. Sure.
So, and yeah, in no way was that going to be a lifestyle that I was looking forward to. Mm. So yeah, it wasn't going to be my thing.
Did he say don't do it? Or was it just like, or he didn't just,
yeah, he kind of said, this isn't something you want. This isn't a lifestyle you guys want. Hmm. Like, I think it was hard. It was late nights. It was long. Sure. It was forcing yourself to be social. It yeah. was, you know, hiring unskilled labor, like mm-hmm. labor issues. Yeah, there's all sorts of reasons why, yeah. but, he hung with it a long time, yeah. had some tough times and some good times. And end of the day, it was pretty good for
yeah.
him.
Yeah. So what happens after high school? Where are you at? Sorry, was there anything in high school that's like pivotal? That's the one.
Not other than it was awesome. Like, it was a great experience. Mm. I loved high school.
Did you kind of come out, like, out of your shell in high school, like in junior high, or same kind of person junior high to high school?
Yeah, I think I was the same kind of person.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And big personality?
Probably bigger than I was comfortable with. Mm. And I think that was part of it, right? Mm. Like, I was, if I would have told people that I felt insecure, they probably wouldn't believe me, mm. right? Because I didn't act that way for yep. sure. But yeah, it was a lot of finding yourself, figuring yep. yourself out. I think that's typical for the age.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't uncommon.
Yeah, I think if you probably surveyed, you know, the class you graduated with, most people they'd feel the same way.
Yeah,
I'm pretty insecure about where I stand and how I operate. And
totally.
But
totally.
But nobody talks about it, which I find fascinating.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, isn't mm-hmm. it? But came out with a real great group of friends, mm-hmm. and to this day still have them. Came out like being really good friends with the woman who became my wife.
No way.
So that was cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then from then it was like, go on to university, and what am I going to do? And I had no idea, but I knew it was something. I knew I wanted to do something within healthcare, and I knew I wanted to do something that was. It's interesting because I knew I wanted to do something in healthcare, and I knew I wanted to do something that was going to give me the life that I wanted. Not necessarily the lifestyle. It wasn't about money. It wasn't about whatever, but I wanted to do something that I enjoyed, mm. right? And so then I started going to university not knowing what that was at that point, right? And then I ended up going to physio school, which was worked out to be great. Loved it.
And why the pull towards like healthcare? What was there? Like, what was...
I don't know.
Were you around it? Or was there somebody in your world that's like, this looks kind of cool?
You know, yeah, maybe. Like, we had a neighbor who was a chiropractor, mm. and I was like, that seems like a cool job. And there were some people like that that we knew.
Yeah.
I don't know why my interest went that way. I knew mm. I was more of a sciences guy than mm. not, but I didn't want to be like, was going to be a lab rat or anything. So, yeah, yeah, I don't know. It just kind of came to me. I wanted to be involved. I wanted to be in a social environment where you can, you know, interact with people and build relationships. I think that was going to be important to me. Certainly you do that as a physio for mm-hmm. sure. Yeah, so that was great. Mm. And then, you know, before I got into physio school, going to university, I was tree planting in the summers. And I remember my aunt saying to me, it's great that you can do a job like this and do something good. And I was like, well, I don't really think about it. Just making money, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. But all along the way, I've done things, like whether it's that, doing something positive, or physio that you make positive impact on people's lives, or even the beer company that's been such a good positive impact to a lot of people. I think mm-hmm. it's always kind of that underlying thing that's mm-hmm. maybe an accident, mm-hmm. but maybe what draws me there too, which mm-hmm. is kind of cool.
Which, they're all connected.
Yeah.
Like all three of those endeavors are kind of...
Right.
They are kind of... you know, making the world a better place, you know, moving with like a positive intent. I think that's
sure.
They're all the same.
Or maybe it's just avoiding the bad side, right? There's nothing bad about those things too.
Yeah.
Right. Which is good. I think that's probably more it.
Do you think, and the tree planting was like, you know, you and I are the same kind of vintage. And back then it was like, you can make a lot of money tree planting.
It's great.
That was the incentive, right? Back then awesome. It was just like short term, big money, work your ass off. And
yeah. University got 4 months off in the summer. Mm-hmm. I'd work for 3 months of mm-hmm. it and make three times what my buddies were making.
Yeah.
It was great.
And pay for all your school and whatever.
Yeah. And it day to day, it sucked. Like there were some crappy days, but looking back, I have like fond moments, fond memories of it. Like I really enjoyed it.
Do you think that, because that's obviously it's a labor intense job.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, once you do a job like that, you understand what it is to not have, I don't want to say, because there's some people that do it for a living, right? But
I don't know how they do that.
That's it, right?
Yeah.
Once you do a hard laboring job, you realize what the potential worst outcome is.
Right.
If you don't figure your shit out, if you don't like manage to get your head on straight, then this is what it looked like, it looks like, which I find those lessons are really important.
It's motivating to do something else, right?
Yeah.
And knowing that you can't do that forever. Mm-hmm. Like you can't plant trees at 50. Yep. The age I'm at, I could never do it.
Yeah.
Right. So you better find something else that's going to, you know, do what you need to do.
Totally. Yeah. So physio.
Motivating.
Is that a 4-year thing?
At the time it was, what the heck was it at the time? At the time it was a 3-year program and you had about 2 years worth of, prerequisites that you needed. Yep. So I took the long road, found myself, didn't get in the first time, got in the second time. So I was in school 8 years.
Oh, no way.
Great 8 years though.
All that.
Don't rush university. I keep telling my kids like, best years. Awesome. Ooh. Yeah. So loved it. Graduated this super small class, then graduated 27 people.
Yep.
So still tight with a lot of them now. Mm-hmm. And it just was, I knew it was exactly what I wanted to do as I was going through school.
No way.
Yeah.
What was it?
For
like,
sure.
I'm a sports person through and through.
Yeah.
I've been on many tables.
Yeah.
And you know, from like Tom Higgins, he used to be the Stamps guy. Like, just like, I remember all my physio people. Mm-hmm. And I think at being an athlete, you realize how integral they are to keep allowing you to do what you do.
Yeah.
What did you feel that was like, oh, I got this is interesting?
I think it was two things. One is I think it's really cool to be an expert in what you're doing, right? And I feel like every physio comes out being trained as being an expert. I mean, it takes years after graduation to actually, you know, consider yourself an expert. But I think to be an expert at something is really cool. Mm-hmm. And the other is just that one-on-one interaction you get with people. Mm-hmm. Like, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Right? And there's a trust there.
Yep.
And I don't know. I love it. I do. I really enjoy it. I mean, I say that I love it, but I do it about 2 hours a week now.
Yeah, because you're in a different...
Right? Yeah. Different place. Yeah. But I won't give it up.
Yeah.
Like people are like, you still practice? I'm like, oh yeah, I still practice, but like barely.
So what is it? Is it like just an exchange in energy? Is it just like, because it's very manual too, right? Like you're actually, there's not one answer for everybody. It's very like choose your own adventure based on what they're feeling.
I would say it's like being a mechanic for a human body instead of for a vehicle, right? That's really what it is.
Yep.
Like you just tinker with things till you figure out what's not working right or where the connection's missing or whatever, and then figure out how to, you know, because the treatment's always the easy part.
Yep.
Treatment's super easy, right? It's always figuring out what that is. So it's that investigation into it as well, right?
Yeah.
And it's not a perfect science.
Yep.
Like there's an art form to it too, right? So you have to, you can't just do X, Y, and Z tests. It's not like taking a blood test and they either have this or don't have this.
Yep.
It's like, you got to feel this and this is kind of loose or this kind of feels this way and this isn't recruiting, this isn't right and this is how he stands and this is off and you know what I mean?
Yep.
So yeah, I don't know. There's a, it's a fun thing too, right? Maybe it's why I like doing puzzles too. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Because
you're things together.
Yeah. That mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The exchange of energy when you're actually like talking to people, do you enjoy that kind of one-on-one? Not banter, just like getting to know somebody. Cause I feel like when you're hurt and you see your therapist like regularly, all of a sudden you build this relationship with people, which weird. I find is, I'm sure sometimes you're like a psychologist.
It's super weird. And we totally are, right? They start talking about things and you like, and that's all part of it. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, because you build up that trust, you have these conversations. And I think there's something about being either, you know, you can be in a closed area sometimes and people are half dressed or barely half dressed, right? So there's this connection and this trust that goes along with it. And so then people start talking about things that you're just not going to talk about on the street, right?
Yep.
So it is pretty cool. And sometimes you got to like pass that off to a psychologist and sometimes it's just like, oh, this person needs to vent and get this out. And this is part of the picture and this is how they're thinking because everybody interprets pain and discomfort and dysfunction differently too, right? So you got to figure out where that person's at. Yeah. So, and part of that's part of the answer of what's going on with them.
Do you, did you find like when you're practicing heavy, like when it was like your thing, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, were you exhausted mentally, like physically? Like what did that, you know, after the lights go off and everyone leaves, what was your, where was your energy level?
Yeah, not physically. Anybody who knows me knows that I don't really get exhausted that easy. Mm. I tend to have a lot of energy. Mm. So no, but it there's certainly longer days emotionally for yeah. sure than others. I keep things pretty light, even when yeah. discussion gets more intimate and personal or whatever. I'm the first guy to break the ice with yeah. a joke about it, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, you yeah. tell me something that is your weakness, and mm-hmm. that's the first place I'm going to next time we talk. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but in a good fun way, yep. in a respectful way, yep. for sure. But yeah, so no, I don't think it was exhausting.
Which is good, right? Because I find like so when I first started doing these shows, and when I shoot two a day, you know, there's like whatever it is, like call it close to 3 hours worth of talking. The first I don't know 15 or 20, I was gassed. At the end of that day of shooting two, I was just like emotionally drained.
Yeah,
just because it's just it's an exchange in energy.
Doesn't surprise me. Like you're very focused on your interviews when you do them, and they're long. They're an hour and a half long, mm-hmm. right? Like with the physio, it's like you got a couple people on the go,
right,
and
right.
so you talk to them. It's like 5 minute
yeah.
bits,
yeah, gotcha.
Right?
Yeah.
So if we took a break right now and came back in 5 minutes, you'd yeah. probably be less mm-hmm. less worn out mm-hmm. by the end of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, totally. We're not doing that.
Little bits of me are good. People find, yeah, yeah. for sure.
So what happens after you graduate the physio?
Yeah, so then my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, Christy, she's already moved to Calgary when I had a year left of school.
Because you're still up in school.
So
8 years later. No hurry, honey.
Don't rush that time. Don't rush that time. Yeah, so I moved out here and got a job. It's awesome. Did a quick trip to Europe with some buddies and then got a job here. And it was great. Worked for a... one of the bigger physio companies mm-hmm. in town, and which was awesome. Got me lots of hands-on patients and yep. really good experiences and some good opportunities to learn. Did that for, I guess I only worked for them for like 3 years, mm-hmm. 3 or 4 years before we opened our own place. But
that move to Calgary, mm-hmm. if she didn't kind of lead the way and show up, was it on your radar to move? Like was Saskatoon going to be your place forever, or did you know you were going to?
It could have been.
Yep.
It could have been. I love it, and it could have been. Mm-hmm. I couldn't go back. Now I couldn't move back, I don't think,
yep.
As much as I love it. But yeah, I probably could have. It wouldn't have surprised me mm. if I would have stayed otherwise.
Yep.
But I'm glad I did, right? It's the natural, I always talk about Calgary being like the big leagues to Saskatoon being yep. the minor leagues, right? Yep. Like so many people come this way. So you move here and you automatically have 10 buddies that you know that have moved here, mm-hmm. right? And it's great. And you go out and you run into this guy from Saskatoon and this guy, you know? Yeah. So it was a real comfortable, easy place to move to, mm-hmm. for sure. And made Calgary very likable right off, right? Which was awesome. Plus you know, when living in Saskatoon, you really had to plan your trips to get out to the mountains.
Yeah.
And it was such a novelty to be able to jump in the car and go mm-hmm. for a hike or a bike, like yeah. in an afternoon.
Yeah.
Like it was bizarre. Yeah.
That, so the move was pretty, you're okay with it?
Awesome.
Because yeah. she was here? Like
She was here. We didn't move in together or anything, yep. but, and I had my just me and my couple dogs, and mm-hmm. yeah, it was great. You got your girlfriend living here already, and you got a half dozen buddies that you're tight with, and
yep.
met lots of people through work, and it was a super easy move, right? And it's a nice distance. Like yeah. I could jump in my car today and, you know, be there for supper,
yep.
and it wouldn't bother me. So, you know, trips back and forth were awesome, and staying in contact with people and
yep.
yeah.
What year was that when you came here?
99.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We had to get Gretzky in there
somewhere. I was like, we were just talking about that. So you worked for this clinic for 3 years, and then, so what's going on in the background, and then why'd you leave?
Yeah, more importantly was that like, in that time, got married, had my first son. Mm. So I guess, because it was in 2002, I started my own clinic. So okay. 99 to 2002, started my own clinic in 2002, which was like chaos, because my wife was pregnant when we were building out.
I think
we opened the clinic June 10th and my son was born June 18th.
Oh, no way.
So it was like chaos more for her than me. Like mm-hmm. I just had to work, right?
Yeah.
She had to deal with it all, plus she was working at the time too. Mm-hmm. So So yeah, it was crazy. It was chaos. And you know, it just came to a point where I knew I really loved the profession, but I hated the culture of the big company, right? I didn't like that. I didn't like working for the man, right? And it's not that it was a bad place to work. I had a great manager. I actually knew the owner of the conglomerate, and he was a good guy. The real thing that pushed me out at the final end is I remember they raised the rates, but it was like a rate for the corporation, not for me. They just did it on their own, so it was like an administrative fee that got added, right? So here I am explaining why this is, and I'm like, I really don't know why the rates changed, because I don't see any of it, right? And so it's apparently because the corporation wants more money, right? And yet they don't put the value on the physio because they're not giving the physio any. So what is it? I don't know what it is. It was just such an ugly thing to do. I was like, I got to get out of here, right? It turned negative for me, and I didn't want to hate it. So, I had three rules for going into business with somebody. One was that we're not really friends or family beforehand. So, like, if things don't work out, it's too bad. I liked you. You're a nice guy, but my life's not going to change without you in it. They had to be hardworking and they had to be honest, right? So I found a guy, great guy, went into business with him, which is awesome. And we started the clinic together.
So the idea of like starting your own thing, obviously was it always lurking in your mind? You know, after a 3-year term with a big kind of corporation, did you know early on did you have these like, in these just like moments of like, oh, I think I could do this better, different, my way?
Yeah, I didn't really think about it or that I was going to go that way necessarily until I did. But it was never overwhelming. It never baffled me. So it must have been something I was comfortable with. And whether that was seeing my dad in business for years or whatever. Like, I'm sure I was just used to it, right? I was comfortable with it.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is, right? Got some good years, got some lean years.
Yep.
You go to work, you can make an impact like in your company. However you want, right? And you get to create a culture, you get to create your own thing. It was something that I was comfortable with and enthusiastic about for sure. But it's not like I went in thinking someday I'm going to have my own clinic, right? That wasn't really it. But it was an easy transition.
It's a choice, right? Like either you're going to go from big corporation to big corporation, or you're going to go from big corporation to like a little startup.
Yeah.
Or big corporation, learn what you like and don't like and then do your own thing.
Yeah. And I think it was that one thing. Like, I really think that I went, oh, I'm not actually valued here. This isn't. Just a number. I'm just pushing patients through for them, right? They don't care. And then I went, there's got to be more meaning to this, right? So that's when you go find it, I guess, right? You got to make it happen if you're not happy. Totally.
So what does it look like when you open up your own thing? Like, what did you change as far as, like, culture, vibe, direction, vision? Like, what was your kind of...
Yeah, well, it was my business partner, Mark, and I, and we just, it was just us, just the two of us. You know, we built a business big enough that we could see it grow and it could be a size that we wanted to be, but at the beginning, it was just the two of us. So.
Find a lease.
Yeah, sign a lease. That was the scary part. That was the only uncomfortable thing, right? And I think the first one we had to put personal guarantees on too.
Yep.
So that was like and there was so much going on. It was just chaos. Like I would just work and then be at home with a newborn and you know like it was
it's that story, right? It's that startup story when it's just like all the things are happening at
once. You didn't even realize it, right? You just did it.
Imagine doing it now.
like now I think I appreciate the energy it took to do it, and I wouldn't do it.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Kidding me? Yeah, one thing at a time, easy,
Yeah.
So yeah, it was chaos, but it was great. Like it was really good. My business partner was awesome. I think we hit our 3-year projections in about 6 months. So we kind of came in with a real conservative outlook and we make this work, right? And then the community obviously needed it and we did a good job and it was great. It was awesome. So really enjoyed that.
How do you hit those numbers so early, do you think? What was the blueprint you were working from?
Well, two things. I think one, we were really conservative in the projections. Like we're like, we need this to be realistic, right? I remember going to the bank and showing them our business plan and they're like, well, this is too slow. It's going to take too long. When are you going to pay yourself? When are you going to, you know what I mean? And I'm like, but these are realistic. I can make up some numbers for you that look better if that means you're going to give me more money.
Yeah.
Right. So that was tough. That was tough getting money at the beginning, actually. Yeah. I remember having to like shut the door, lay a map on the table, here where physio clinics are, here's where we're going, this is how it's going to work. These are realistic numbers. I'm not going to bullshit you, mm-hmm. right? And I really had to push to get mm-hmm. the funding we needed. So, and it worked out great. It was awesome.
And then something clicked though, right? When people walked through that front door, there was something different about it. Did you do something calculated, or was it just you being you?
It was very calculated. And very much it was a, what don't we like? Like we left somewhere for a reason. We wanted to change things up. And why is that? Right? What didn't we like? And so we said, okay, well, these are the things we're not going to do. We're going to change this, right? And everybody with the complete understanding that a business has to make money or it doesn't exist, right? And that's to this day. I mean, that's just the reality, right? But I wanted it to be just an honest business that takes reasonable margins and mm-hmm. treats its people, the people that work there, well, because they are the company. That's mm-hmm. what they are. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not the building. It's not the colors on the wall. It's the people.
Yeah.
Right. So,
basic though, right? I think the same, like, I feel the same way. So I think maybe we take for granted what our basic is, but those basic principles.
Yeah.
Make things work.
Yeah. No, I don't think you take it for granted. Watching episode 100 with your two people like that. So you don't take them for granted. Mm. That's good. But that's I think you get it. You understand. Like without them, it doesn't exist, or it exists differently and probably not as successfully.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I'm interested to hear the scaling piece for you. You know, what that clinic starts with two, I don't know how big mm-hmm. it was. I don't know if there's only two beds and like two, you know, two practitioners in there, but how does the scale, how do you figure out when to scale and how to scale?
Yeah, always really scary things to do. Mm-hmm. Like I really find scaling to be a very scary thing mm-hmm. and we'll get into the beer company, but that's where it really scares me. But because all of a sudden at that point you got to bring on, you're more responsible. You're bringing on more staff. You have to pay them. You have to make sure you have to, the real slow growth is comfortable and is good. But then all of a sudden you're like, we got to bring somebody on. Well, now we have to bring on staff, we're responsible to them, and we have to fill that caseload. Like a whole caseload has to be filled. Yeah. Holy shit. Like this can't happen overnight, but you want it to, right? Mm-hmm. So it was hard. And so we did make a clinic that was going to be big enough to have a, you know, I think we're 10 beds in there kind of thing. So it was pretty empty when it was just the two of us or one of us working at a time. Hey? And at the beginning, it wasn't even that somebody at the front. We were the front. Yeah. Like we go to the front, do everything. This was hilarious. So that scaling kind of comes in steps. You hire and you got to grow, and then you hire and then you got to grow. And the success is kind of in those same steps. Sometimes you got to step back and you earn less money, but you're growing, right? Because you have to pay somebody else to do some work or whatever. So it was always that you really got to be sure that you see the progress before you take that next step and hire that next person, do that next thing. And you never really know if you are right to do it until you've either done it or failed at it. And but you know, there's only one thing that I've really done well, and luckily through those years is hiring good people, right? Like, if there's one thing I do well, it's hire good people, right?
And what do you think your superpower is to do that?
I don't know. I don't know the superpower. Like, I think I'm a good judge of character, and I understand that building a business that is this personal, you have to have people that understand that and that are good people that are empathetic and that are, you know, compassionate and good at what they do. But I think it's always interesting. I was talking about this the other day with somebody. And we were talking about hiring people and resumes and, you know, what school they went to and how important that is to them. And he's in finance. So it's a totally different beast.
Yep.
But I'm like, I get a resume and I don't even look at the resume. I phone them, talk to them. Mm. Right. And sometimes after that phone call, I'm like, oh, thanks. We'll get back to you.
Yeah.
Couldn't hold a conversation.
That's it. Right.
Not them. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Can't have them representing the clinic. Right. Yeah. And then someone holds a conversation. You understand them. That's great. You bring them in. That first interview with them, we don't really touch the resume.
Yeah.
We talk about them and people and where they're from and whatever.
Yeah.
And then if they've passed that litmus test, then it's a matter of looking at that resume. What do they have? And because everybody who comes in applies for physiotherapy, they have a bare minimum.
Right.
The college determines that, dictates that, right? Mm-hmm. So we already know they've met the bare minimum, but now who are they and what do they have and how motivated are they? So I think it's because of the order of priority in who I cut.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Has brought good people on,
which is a different approach, right? Like it's a people driven approach versus
like But it's such a, like, they're the face of the company, right?
Mm-hmm.
And especially now that I'm really not there that much, it's super important.
Yeah, you gotta hope you did the right thing.
Yeah.
So where does this thing get going? Where is it? You fill up all 10 beds?
So, yeah, for the most part. And you know what? It really happened. Mark and I started another clinic, so he was at one, I was at the other.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, as you're telling me all these, like, business moves, I'm thinking, where do you get the business acumen to pull this off? Does Mark have an education behind this? Is it just trusting what you think? Is it researching something? Like, how do you decide all these business things?
Yeah, it's by making really expensive mistakes. Totally. That's it, right? You just, what's best, and putting some thought to it and chatting about it and then trying something and, ooh, that was $10,000. Didn't work out, right? So don't do that again, right? I think that's it, more than anything else. Just make mistakes, learn along the way, be cognizant of your successes and your failures, and try to reinvent your successes and try not to do those failures again, right? Yeah.
Like,
so.
That simple?
It's that simple, dude.
But you have a vision, you have an idea, you kind of work towards that spot, and then just hope that it's the right thing.
Yeah, I think so.
I love hearing it, because that's, you know, this is the cool experience for me, right? This is why I get to ask these questions with successful business people. It's like, well, how do they do it?
Well, especially with that business. So with the beer company, we'll get to it. But then I did some accelerator programs and things like this where you actually learn how to run a business. And I'm like, wow, would have been good to know that, right?
That $10,000 mistake.
Which one? There is a few.
Yeah.
But so I think with that one, that was it. And then you figure out what's important, what's not important, what your goal is, what you're trying to do. And so.
All right. So number two opens up.
Well, number two opens up and everything's just great. Cruising along. Awesome. Fantastic. And then my business partner decides that he wants to move back to Ontario. So I bought him out. But I couldn't afford to buy him out. So I sold the one clinic that he's at, that he runs, that so that there'd be an asset there we could use to actually buy him out.
Yep.
So now I'm back down to one.
Yeah.
But I'm still a big part of it at that point. Like, you're in every day.
You're like,
I'm the face. Presence. I'm the, for sure. And then we had got a place in Invermere. And the first summer that my kids were like just born, and then 2 and 4, right? So we go there for 2 weeks, a holiday. And I was like, oh, this is the life. This is awesome.
And you had a taste of lake life. Waskasu.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, there was a place that was special to me that I like going to, that we grew up at. Like, it was, and I really wanted that, right?
Yeah.
So that was our motivation to, you know, put ourselves in a big hole and go get a place, right? Mm-hmm. So it was important to us for sure. So we went for 2 weeks, and then I'm like, how can I spend more time here? So I just approached a physio clinic in Invermere and said, how can I come on board? Like, next summer I want to come work here.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, if I work there, then we can be here, right?
Yeah.
Which is great. And so they're like, oh yeah, you can cover here. We'd love to have you. So it's awesome. So the next summer I planned, you know, put some more duties onto my office manager, brought in a new physio to cover for me.
Yeah.
I go work in Invermere. Everything seems to be good. I make a lot of trips back and forth. And then come September, I go back to work and I'm like, they don't need me here.
This thing is working without me.
So that was a real point of, I don't want to inject myself to that extent anymore, right? Like, why would I? Things are great. That's an opportunity for me to work on business development and let things run from an operational standpoint, right? So that was a big light bulb moment for me, right? And that went to, wow, maybe my time isn't what I need here. Maybe I have something, right? Now I can just run with it. And it was the smartest thing that ever happened. It was awesome. Yeah, totally.
That aha moment when you come back in September, you're like, oh, the walls are still here. There's the door, people are coming through the front door.
You look at your profit and loss. You're like, I made money and I wasn't even here. Like, that was a beautiful thing. So
how did where'd your mind start to wander?
Well, then it went to, this is it. Like, I get to do what I want to do.
Like a lifestyle.
Lifestyle wise, right? Like, I liked work, but I had to be there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if I'm going to have to be at work, I enjoyed it. It was great. It was awesome.
Yep.
But it's not like I wake up in the morning and go, I get to go to work, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, I guess I got to go to work, right? So I pulled back and left those responsibilities with those people. Mm. And, there was like 12 years there where I was like 10-hour-a-week guy.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Which is, I'm glad you say that out loud, you know, because people hear the story of, you know, you figuring out that you don't have to be there anymore, mm-hmm. but OPS, there was 12 years of all the hours, like busting your ass, right?
Yeah.
It's not an overnight thing where you can just like walk away and be like, okay, I'm still making money.
Right. Yeah. I still had to do some stuff and some things I've never let go of. Mm-hmm. Right. But it was a really nice feeling to not mm-hmm. be needed. Mm-hmm. And it was great. And my opportunity to like spend so much time at home, yep. the kids and stuff, mm-hmm. which was great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm. But people always wondered, like, what do you guys do? My wife and I are both home all day.
Made some good decisions.
It's awesome.
And worked out great. Put in a lot of work for more than a decade.
And we were reasonable with it too, right? Yeah. Like, I understood that if I go to work, I can make a lot more money.
Yeah.
Because I don't have to pay this person, and I can build things. And yep. I could have built, scaled faster. Mm-hmm. But so there was an understanding that we're sacrificing from a financial perspective to yep. some extent, right? We were yep. comfortable with where we were, obviously, or we wouldn't have done it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there was you have to give some of that up too, right? Mm-hmm. You're never going to, you can't be semi-retired and make the money you're going to make if you weren't semi-retired. You yep. would have made more. Like yep. had I been working 60 hours a week, I'd have made a lot more money.
For sure.
But I'll never regret those years for sure. They were awesome.
What happens? Where'd your mind kind of get to?
So those years, I loved every minute of it. Like yep. whether it was being with the kids, picking them up from school, going to the things, coaching them,
yep.
like time I had, invaluable
yep.
for sure. But then all of a sudden your youngest, even your youngest, isn't coming home after school anymore. They're going out with buddies, right? And then my wife and I are looking at each other. I'm like, wow. She's like, you're a lot, Graham. You're a lot.
You're still here.
So then that was the point where I was like, okay, now I have this passive, to some extent, passive income working for me. Mm-hmm. Now I got to fill some time, mm-hmm. right? Like, and I filled it with activities and I got lots of hobbies, yep. which is great, which yep. is awesome. But I kind of still needed something that, I wanted to work on. Anyway, so in that time frame, actually back same year that my youngest is born and we get the property in Invermere, I stopped drinking that year, right? Mm-hmm. And I always actually had a really great relationship with drinking. I had a lot of fun with it. I mean, yeah. I did my share of dumb stuff while I was doing it, but it was, you know, it was fine.
Yeah.
It was good. But yeah, someone was quitting that I know. And so I'm like, yeah, I'll quit with you for a year. Mm-hmm. It's great, right? So I did that.
That was it. Just like support.
Yeah, that was it, right? Mm-hmm. So, and then the year was tougher than I expected, right?
How so?
It's that social component,
yep.
right? That yep. was the, you have to be really comfortable with yourself mm-hmm. to go drinking a non-alcoholic beer 17 years ago, yep. right?
For sure.
Almost 18 years ago at a party and have a non-alcoholic beer in your hand. Mm-hmm. Like there was like a target on your back.
And the shitty ones too.
The shitty beers, right? This is the problem. But it was like that, dude, you're not drinking. Why aren't you drinking? Like, mm-hmm. and it's automatically that, oh, you must be in the program or you must have an issue. This must be court ordered. Like, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. this is bad, right? And I'm like, no, this isn't bad. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just doing it for somebody else. But I didn't mm-hmm. even want to tell people that because I know that person is explaining the hard explanation. I was yeah. like, dude, I got to quit. I'm having troubles, whatever. So mine was easy. So I had no interest in telling people why. I was just like, yeah, I'm not drinking. Mm. But you could see it was like weird. And you got to get through like Halloween's. Like, am I going to still act like that idiot
yeah.
with, you know? Mm-hmm. And I wanted to. Mm-hmm. I had fun doing that. I mm-hmm. liked being that guy, mm-hmm. right? So it took a year to learn how to be myself mm. without the lubricant of
yep.
of being a little bit mm-hmm. buggered up while I did it, mm-hmm. right? So yeah, that took a while.
And,
you know?
And 17 years ago, to your point, people are making this decision not to drink because of either a big reason, mm-hmm. DUI, gone through a program. Like there's usually big pivotal moments. Yeah, I finally yeah. got that word right.
Yeah.
That actually force them to make a change. You doing this, you know, support a friend, which is great, obviously, right. but like different.
It was atypical for sure. Yeah. Very much so. It was an odd time for sure. And it's just, it's what you're comfortable with. It's you, what you want to do. Like you finish playing hockey, you want to sit and have a beer in the dressing room.
For sure.
Right.
Yep.
So yeah, I missed a lot of that. I missed my normal drinking habits being normal.
Yep.
Right. And having to change it. So
did you take yourself out of situations? Like, you know, if there was a group of people going somewhere and you're just like, I don't feel like.
Not never.
You still had that like outgoing personality to go like.
Bit of a stubborn.
Yeah, yeah. Put prick, yourself there.
Actually. Yeah, totally. I would have probably gone to more because of it. No, I was pretty motivated. And during that year, it was one thing. But then when that year came up and I'm like, okay, I guess I'll go back to drinking now. I was like, do I want to? Like, you know, I got a 1, 3, and 5-year-old at home.
Yep.
Haven't been hung over in a year,
mm-hmm.
right? Haven't put on any weight. Wife and I like argue way less.
Yep.
It's all good. Not that we argue a ton, but you know what I mean? Like those, you know, there's nothing to instigate that.
Mm-hmm.
No, I saw the value in it, right? And I'm still not an anti-drinking culture person. Yeah. I think it's great. It's hilarious. 99% of people I know drink, right? And I have fun with them when they do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just saw the pros in it, more pros than cons. Right?
Yeah.
So then I'm just like, hey, I guess I'm not going to drink.
You're done.
And my wife was asked, like, is this forever? Is this forever? But I was super non-committal. I was like, maybe.
See what next week looks like.
Well, you don't want to fail. You don't want it to be a failure don't. But then the longer you went on, not that I was like in a program counting days, but the longer you went on, now it's been 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, right? Now all of a sudden it's like, well, now I can't go back, right? I got this streak going, right?
Mm-hmm. Doing some work behind this.
No kidding. So never went back, but then one day I was like, that core to this, my frustration of drinking shitty beer, I think correlated with those years where I got this time on my hands, my kids aren't coming home anymore. Like, what am I going to do? And, you know, you started seeing the very beginning of non-alcoholic craft beer come along. Right. But I still thought that I could do better.
Mm.
Right. So,
because it was like, what year was this?
This would have been 2018. Well, I kind of started thinking about it like 2017, 2016, 2017. Yep.
So 18, there still wasn't a lot of many options, good options at least, right? It was still like early days.
I didn't think so.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I didn't think so.
You tried them all, obviously.
I tried them all. Yeah, I tried them all. There was only so many. There's only a handful, right? And I also thought like, Why does these beers have to, not only, there's got to be a way to make them taste better. And I didn't know that because I don't know how to brew beer to this day. Actually, I don't know how to brew beer. But also like, why do they look like a non-alcoholic beer?
Yeah.
Right? Why do they have to look like a non-alcoholic beer? You got, the craft industry is booming, right? Mm-hmm. And that was the other thing I was motivated by, like all these different kinds of beer. And I really liked beer. Like I drank a lot of beer, like growing up and playing rugby and playing hockey. And like, I'm awesome at this, at the lake, right? So like, why can't it, and you see the craft beer industry grow and it's so cool. Mm-hmm. Like you go and you look at the, you know, I remember for one of my staff members, him and his wife had a little girl. And so I went and I bought them, I knew they were beer drinkers. So I went and bought them a box of beer. Like I just went to a craft beer shop and bought one of everything.
Cool.
Right.
Yeah.
And got them like 100 different beers. And, I was like, they're awesome. The labels are awesome. Mm-hmm. Like all these different kinds are so cool. I'm like, I gotta have this, but I don't want to drink. I got this great streak going on. Right. So it's like 10 years now. It's a decade. You can't mess up a decade.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so then it was born. Like, I just started thinking about it. I started looking at it. A buddy of mine is a chemist, PhD. We started talking about it. Mm. And then another buddy of mine kind of bought into the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Young. He's actually on the Wheat Can. And Grand Prairie. There's another Grand Prairie connection. Then we went for it. It's awesome.
And when you decide to go for it, you just trust it? You're willing, like, I guess what I'm angling towards is like the risk, your risk tolerance or your ability to just kind of either work through in your head, talk to the right people and just like, okay, this feels right. Like, how do you make that decision? Cause it's obscure.
It was going to be, it was self-fulfilling and it was going to be, we're going to throw some money at this. We're going to have this one beer.
Yep.
it's going to be a beer that I like, so I can have it.
Yep.
And if we sell it in some stores locally, that'd be pretty cool. That'd be a neat thing.
Okay. Right? So again, you kind of set the bar low.
Set the bar low.
Yeah.
We brewed like 23 hectoliters of beer, right?
So like a little guy.
5,000 beer, little guy, put it in my garage. And I'm like, okay, this is awesome. I love it. This is great. I get to drink lots of good beer that I like.
Yeah.
And then just start going out, talking to some craft beer stores and some breweries and stuff like this. And it was like, I wanted to be part of that craft beer culture. Yeah. So I like went to the breweries and talked to them, and you guys need an alcoholic option, and and had met some great people and people that took it on. And it's, you know, and then the craft beer stores, and these are the people I really love talking to about this, right? Because they're beer lovers, right? And I realized as I was getting into this that I missed loving beer and missed having and loving beer.
Yeah.
And so that was awesome. And then it was just this real small thing, but then you realize how well it does, and then the opportunities. And then I'm like, oh God, what's happening? this is gonna be bigger than I thought, more than I thought, more hours and time and investment than I thought it was going to be. But at that point, you've bought into it and you believe in it, and you're convinced that it's actually going to be something. So there was no, I didn't feel like it was a risk at any point in time. Because I was already sacrificing the initial stuff that was just, this would be a neat thing, be small.
And because you built something already. You built a business.
Right.
Which I find kind of interesting. Like, I'm sure you learned a lot of things of like scaling, you know, where to put your money. And like, you've built something once.
Yeah.
Did it give you like confidence that you could do this thing?
No, this is a total different world.
Just a total different world to draw on. Just like.
With the physio clinics, you're providing a service.
Yep.
And you're bringing in experts. Right. With this, I don't know how to brew beer.
Yeah.
I don't know what's good and what's bad, other than what I like, which means nothing.
Yes, right? No, yes, no.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I have no idea how to deal with packaged goods, right? Yeah. I have no relationships in this industry. I have no nothing, right? I am like the worst person to start this business. Right? I felt but there was no pressure on it, because it was just this investment that was that was gone.
And that's so it. You knew that, and that's it, right? You had a dollar amount in your head that you're like, I'm done with it.
Yeah.
If I don't see anything from it, I'm okay with that.
Okay with that. Yeah, totally. I thought there'd be something from it. I didn't think it was going to be anything, but I didn't feel like I was taking a big risk with it whatsoever. So it was a different beast for sure. And was my business knowledge a little higher than it was back before starting the physio clinics? Yeah, probably. I probably learned some business lessons in there, but this is different.
Yeah.
And even the physio clinics, you draw from your community, right? You're entrenched in this community. You have relationships with sports organizations, community associations, schools, whatever, right? Yeah. And you draw from this community. With this, like, to make any money at, you know, in a non-alcoholic beer industry that is, non-alcoholic beer is what, about 1.5% of beer sales? Like, you can't sell in your community, let alone your city, let alone your province or Western. Like, you have to expand and get big to actually make any money in it, right? So this is a different beast. And this is, I'm sure we'll get there. But as we get to the point where I'm at now, I'm like, I really don't know how to do this.
So like run me through how this thing, just like this tipping point of like, okay, I got 5,000 beers in my garage corner here and my buddies love me.
Right.
You know, to all of a sudden, where's the next moment for you? You're like, oh, this is.
Yeah. And my buddies didn't love me over it. They still thought it was ridiculous. And I had to explain to every one of them why this was a good idea.
And you're like 10 years in not drinking.
Yeah.
And they're like.
Yeah, well, they're like, you know, we're not going to make a business out of this. Like, there's no way. That doesn't make any, you know, who's going to buy it? And really, I think at that point in time, non-alcoholic beer sales took up about 1/3%.
Wow.
In, I think it was North American stat. So like very, very little. Like, that's a small sliver of the pie you're working for, right?
Totally.
So from there, we were at the beginning of that wave, but we definitely saw the opportunity. And there were people that thought we were crazy.
Yeah.
People in the industry thought we were crazy and had no interest in getting involved. And we had people that thought this is a great idea. I'd love this, right? We were convinced on it. And then, you know, I think we had the time to kind of try to convince other people and to sell it.
Yeah.
And I hate being a salesperson, by the way.
Are you good at it though?
No, I don't know. I don't think I am. I think I'm good at building relationships with people.
Yeah.
Right? But no,
but I'm then not asking a good for something person. Is like,
Yeah, I don't like asking.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I really don't. Yeah. It always is like this chat and we get to know each other and whatever. And it's like, hey, if you need anything, let me know. Mm-hmm. Here's the beers we have.
Yeah.
Right? And then people are like, well, did you follow up? And I'm like, no, I told them to get a hold of me if they need it. I'm like, dude, you got to follow up with them. I'm like, oh, I suck at following up. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. So that's why I loved relationships where we could be like guys you go biking with or people you had another relationship with because then it was easier. Mm-hmm. Right? But no, to this day, it's not my forte. Don't like it. Don't like it at all. Because I never had to sell and convince somebody.
Yeah.
Right? I was a expert in physio. Like, I know I can fix this and do this and manage this. And if I don't, then I'll get you to the right person that will, right? Or maybe you can't be fixed.
Yeah.
But I'm not an expert in this, right? Mm-hmm. Whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I was lucky to partner up with some super good people.
Yeah.
I was lucky. And maybe it's that same, you know, like we talk about how I hired physios. Maybe it was the same thing. But like I have working relationships with people in this, whether it's people that we brew with or that we sell to or that would, you know what I mean? Distribution channels, the group that does our graphics and labeling. Like I've been with from the beginning just because I think I went in partnership with people that were good people.
Yeah.
So I've super never cool. like looked for, can I get this label a few cents cheaper somewhere else? Mm-hmm. I have no idea. Mm. This is where my business acumen sucks.
Well,
maybe I can make more, but it's so like comfortable, right? Which is great.
Mm.
Yeah.
So how's this thing progress?
As it grew and got busier, I had the time because I don't put a lot of time into the physio clinics. But my business partner, Kevin, he just struggled with the time. He was like, he's a gem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's an awesome guy. But he struggled with the time. So all of a sudden, he's not phoning me back, right? And he's like, oh, because he feels bad because this didn't get done. But he's a busy guy. Like, he's got good stuff going in his career. So he's a busy guy. So then I bought him out. I said, this isn't worth you. This is not supposed to be stressful, dude. Like, we're supposed to enjoy this together. Yep. And if we don't, then let me just buy you out. So I bought him out, which was great, which is good. Now it's all on me. Now I miss having somebody to talk to, right? Talk about it. So that was tough, but we grew, we continued to grow. I have, agencies and brokers in BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan that I work with, and some relationships with some people outside to kind of get it nationwide and stuff. But, we're still working on getting on the ground, some people in the ground in some other provinces. Mm-hmm. But definitely grew. And I think, you know, it's nice that we have a good brand. People have their own opinions and things, but I really am comfortable and confident in the brand that we have. I think that our product itself is very good as well. And we've won enough awards to prove that. So really it was just a matter of having the industry grow or that segment grow, right? Yeah. Like I say, it was 0.3%. And now it's like, you know, 1.5%, pushing 2%. Yep. Like that's big growth. It's big growth of a really small segment.
Did you feel that though?
Oh, for sure.
Like you feel that on the volume side of things. Like
it's
more conversations, volume. Like it's,
it's and the bigger acceptance of it. Right. Yep. That's the biggest thing. And that's what I think these big guys have done. I don't think I've done that. I've given a good product. Right. Mm-hmm. But I think like Heineken getting into it so big, and like some of the big names that can really spend money. You look at the money that Guinness and Heineken and you know, Budweiser or whatever are spending in this segment. It is like, I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. But they're just promoting the whole segment. They're promoting the lifestyle. They're promoting that it's great and okay. And that there's options.
Yep.
And so they're making it, they're helping make it really acceptable, like socially and whatever else. And then I think those people are finding us because again, as even though there's three times as many options now as there were, they're still going to find us
for sure.
Right.
Yep.
So that's good.
It's interesting to think like that, right? To like when the big companies start coming into your pond to look at it from the lens of like, this is good because it's bringing more exposure. The other way to look at it is like, oh shit, we're dead. But you're so different that thought didn't enter your mind.
Yeah, I think, interesting. I think there's a couple of reasons, because people always ask that, are you concerned with the number of new entrances coming in? And I'm like, I think it's great. Mm. And even local craft groups that come in that do this now, because lots of different breweries have their one-offs and whatever. I think what we talk about that's how small that sliver is of actual people, non-alcoholic beer drinkers, right? They're going to find me. They're going to find their favorite beer.
Yep.
You know, and then at that point, they're going to decide who they're going to drink, right? Yep. So I think by having a good product and a good brand, that'll take care of itself. Mm-hmm. Now we have to convince the other 98 point whatever percentage people, beer drinkers, that only drink alcoholic beer, that this is an option for them so they can drink more beer more often, more places, and not have, you know what I mean? Without, somehow do that without it being negative on their lifestyle.
Yep.
Because I don't think every person who consumes alcohol is a negative, it's negative on them. Sometimes it's great. And then we get to go after those people.
Yeah.
And that's fun. And that's when they're starting to really see all this advertising and stuff too. And more, the more people that, that have a non-alcoholic beer and they're okay and comfortable with it, then the more likely they are to do it. Like, you know, I was cleaning up a poker game at my house the other day. My kid had, I went to the garage and half the beers in there are my beer cans. These are 17-year-old kids drinking non-alcoholic beer. Like, I, sorry, 18-year-old kids. I can't imagine, I can't imagine taking a non-alcoholic beer to anything when I was that age. I never would have been confident enough to do it. But now it's such a commonplace, right? And it's great to see. So
it's interesting. You're catching me at a, at an interesting spot in my life. For some, in the last 12 months, I've gone to like two house parties and my move is to go buy a six pack of nons. And go there. And I do it for two reasons. One, because I can drive there, drive home. And then the second piece is I can wake up the next morning and go do my thing. Whether it's water skiing, going to the gym, riding my bike. So you kind of get the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
You have that reason. You have that reason to go to the fridge when you're at these social places, which I generally don't like. So you have something in your hand, which satisfies that piece.
Yeah.
You have the reason to get out of a conversation to go reload out of the fridge.
Right.
And then you can kind of like, but you can drive home. It's okay, see you later. But so this is, like you said, it's just, there's a, it's an option now. Like it should be, there's consideration now, which I think is.
And it satisfies to such a great extent. It satisfies that social aspect, right? You talk about having something in your hand. Have you ever been to a party and tried to not have anything in your hand?
It's horrible.
So uncomfortable.
I leave.
So uncomfortable. I know. It's the worst, right? So this way you have that and you have this cold beer and someone wants to cheers you or you whatever, right? Yeah. It's such a, and it's a talking point or it's a whatever. I think it's necessary.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So it's good to be an option for those people that don't want to drink, but they can still have that option, have that same experience, right? Because I don't feel like I really don't feel at this point that I miss out on much, right? Which is great. Although there's times that I'm like, oh, I could really use a drink right now. Like, you know, stressful times or like I had fun. I had fun going getting drunk with buddies and doing stupid stuff. Yeah. And sometimes I came home with a black eye and, you know, deserved it. You deserved it usually. But so, and I still miss those times to some extent, right? But it's just pros and cons, right?
That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, do you have a idea where this is going to go? And that, that's like a, that's a wide open question of just how, the question's more like, How do you see this thing? Like, what do you, what's your vision for it?
So I have a business mentor and I like meet with him every now and then we chat about this and he asked me this, he's asked me this every frequently since it started. And I'm like, I don't know.
Annoying question, by the way?
No, not at all. Not at all. It's, I wish I had an answer because I don't have an answer. And I think I do need an answer, right? But I don't know what it is. Like if this turned into a legacy company and one of my kids took it over, awesome. Like it's great. It's only been positive. It's only been super fun to grow in. It's a great fun industry to be in. You're in the beer industry, but there's zero negativity about it, right? Other than some judgment around it, but that's okay. That's we're comfortable with that. So that would be awesome. Or do we invest money and get investors and build it and sell it and it just becomes this financial win? Then that sounds awesome too. That always sounds awesome. So I don't know. I don't know the answer. I'm like, either way, I want to grow it. Like, I want to do that. Right. And so this is, so I don't have an answer to that, which is kind of too bad, but this is where I am right now.
But it's, but it's honesty though, right? Like, this is, this is the other thing about like sitting across from successful business people, right? Some, there's no one way. There's not, you know, some people probably can give me the 5-year thing and there's others. And, you know, most people that I've had on this show, it's the same answer.
Interesting.
There isn't like this structure behind it. It's more just like a feel and creativity and opportunities and experiences that put them on a path versus, well, in year five, it's going to, like, I'm year seven right now and I've never heard that once.
Yeah. Yeah. And it changes day to day and stuff too, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I see where it can go. And I think I owe a responsibility to the brand and the product
mm-hmm.
and the people that have worked with me on it
yeah.
that it should grow, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it deserves that, right? So this is where I am now, is that I think I'm good at growing community business, yeah. organic growth, but it's got to take that next step, mm-hmm. right? And it's got to go, it's time to go away from that and grow quicker, faster, yeah. out, right?
Yeah.
And I'm really starting to learn my limitations
mm.
and what I am not really good at.
Mm.
Like I knew things I wasn't good at,
yeah.
but I always thought I can get by.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, I can't get by. Totally not. So this is where it's time. Like I've, you know, now for a couple, 3-4 years there, it was just me, 3 years, I guess. It was just me, right? And then my dealing with agents and whatever, distribution companies and stuff. But so now I brought in a sales manager guy and I'm a bookkeeper and I just hired a fractional CFO, cool. which is going to be huge.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I can see sooner than later bringing on a CEO and just sitting back going, okay, this is where I see myself. As long as you're comfortable, CEO, of me being in this, in this part of it, this is where I think I do have strengths.
Mm-hmm.
But the other stuff that I've been faking for 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. like, get me out of here,
mm-hmm.
right? And let it actually do, because I think it's established enough and now it's time to grow. And I don't know how to do that. Yeah. I know more now than I did. Like I said, I did a couple acceleration programs and things and met some good people and got some good advice and have some good people to talk to about it. Part of it is that there's parts that I'm not good at that I'm still have the role in. And the other part is that as motivated as I am is to see this grow and do well, like I'm not willing to keep doing 60, 80 hour weeks
it's not gonna break
anymore.
You.
It's not.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. I'm not like the last couple of years have been that
mm-hmm.
and they've been busy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I hit 50 this summer, dude. Like, oof.
That's a number.
Yeah, it's a number. And we've had some serious heart-to-hearts, my wife and I. Like, how many years do you have that are good years? Yep. Because a big part of me being happy is being active and being out doing things that I love. And how many more years you got, right? Mm-hmm. How much more time do you have with your kids before they've moved away and have families? You only get to see them. Ooh, you know, like, mm-hmm. you got to take advantage of these times.
Yep.
So it's time to make that move and mm-hmm. make that step and not sacrifice the growth of the company because it deserves it.
You segued perfectly into the thread I wanted to take you down, which is how active you are.
Mm.
How does that fit into your world? Like, how does that, how does it fit? Whether it's how important it is or like, is it a conscious decision to allocate time and energy? But that one's like a really important piece to my world.
Well, so much of my decisions, I think along the way have been lifestyle driven, right? And so I love it. Like, I love being out and being active and being with people that I get to spend that time with. Like, I love it. Part of it is that I need it, or my wife would, she would hate to have me around, not exercise. Like, I get compared to the dog that I told you about, the little miniature schnauzer with all the energy. And she's like, she's not like, the dogs need to walk. She's like, Graham, you guys need to walk.
Go run yourself.
Go do something. Go exercise.
Don't let the dog run you.
It's totally it. Yeah. So I have a super supportive side of that. Part of it is I'm sure she enjoys her time when I'm not there. And the other part is she knows I need that to be sane. And then I just really enjoy it. I just really love it. And I value it, right? And I value putting those moments, right?
Yeah.
So, I've
always been like that. Have you, because some people that I come across, it's like a newfound thing where they're at a point in their life where they need it.
Yeah.
Have you always had to?
I think it's always, always. There's a really good buddy of mine. And we would, went through high school and university and stuff with. And we would always, no matter what time we were up till, like our eyes would open at 6:30, 7 in the morning, right? And it's like, well, let's go do something while all these guys, deal with their their issues and get their sleep, right? Yeah. And I think I always had that, right? And it's just, it's I need to have my running wheel, right? I don't actually run. I hate running.
Just biking. But biking is your jam, right?
I love biking.
Yeah.
I love biking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love biking. I love team sport. I think there's, as much as I love team sport and love what I got out of that, I wrestled through high school and stuff as well. Mm-hmm. Love that. Love the single sport thing or single person sport. Find a ton of value with that. I made my kids all wrestle. Mm.
Good.
They hated it.
I'm sure. Wearing spandex would freak me out too.
Actually, their junior high program didn't have a coach.
Oh, no way.
So I went and like started a team there.
Oh, crazy.
It was awesome. Mm. It was great. I did that for 6 years, I guess. Mm. And it was fantastic. But a couple funny stories out of that is my daughter was awesome. No interest in it at all or continuing. But she was in city finals her last year. This is a funny story. And so she comes off at half and it's like, I'm just like, I get emotional with my kids. Mm. Anyway, she comes off halftime and she's like, I can't put my mouth guard in. I'm like, why? She's like, I got this loose tooth. I'm like, well, pull it out. So he reaches in, pulls her tooth out, hands it to me, puts her mouth guard back in, goes and wins cities.
No way. Amazing. Loved
it. Amazing. So good. Yeah. Loved it. It's so such cool. A funny story.
It's so cool that you can actually be, or that you took the time to actually be involved at that level. You know, you could easily say, you let it on the coach. Well, it's a missed opportunity, but to actually step up and do it. That's the reason that these cool opportunities present themselves,
I'd love to, I love it. Mm. Like I love coaching. Mm. Yeah. I get way more out of it than the kids do. Mm.
There's something special about it. Cause I've coached my nephews for the last 4 years, like U9s, just like watching their progression, watching them learn, whether it's focus, whether it's, understanding authority and hierarchy, just watching them develop over a short amount of time.
Yeah.
I find it's very fulfilling.
Yeah. And they love you.
They
love you.
And I...
Especially at that age.
Yeah. And I go down the path of like, lead with discipline.
Yeah.
I'm not your best friend.
Right.
But I'm going to give you parameters where you can play. And then when you succeed there, you're going to feel it.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, they understand there's boundaries.
Yeah.
And they want to perform.
Right.
And that is like, I find that a very interesting human experience.
Yeah, I don't think you have to be their best friend, but you got to be their biggest supporter.
For sure.
Right? That's a big thing.
When they win.
They feel that.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge.
Totally.
And then I've had these relationships for the last 20 years with these kids. And now it's like people calling, will you give me a reference letter? Or people come by and visit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome.
That's amazing.
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
And it's surprising too. You know, like you don't expect those phone calls. Mm-hmm. You know, you lead with a good intention. You're just doing this thing in the moment. And then all of a sudden, fast forward, there's like these amazing.
Yeah. There'll be kids that I coach that I'll have relationships with forever.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll be beer reps or maybe they'll be on the can. Who knows, totally. Right? Imagine doing a can with like some crazy wrestler guy. Put it on the board.
So many. It's such a neat artistic part. Like I was never an artistic person, right? Whatsoever. And so probably about, 10 years ago, I started playing guitar, just kind of self-taught and playing guitar, and I suck at it. But I love it. Mm. Like I go in there and I play my guitar and belt it out. My family's like, geez.
Dad.
Yeah, come on. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I love it. But this is, and that's been a nice way to bring out that artistic side, right? That I never had in any capacity. And the beer cans have been similar. Like the beer company itself has been similar, like, which is great. That's which cool. is super cool. Use another part of your head, right? Which is awesome. Yeah.
It's been a fun one.
Yeah, man. I enjoy it.
Like really cool.
Yeah.
Really cool to hear the story and really cool, like I said, catching me at a time in my life where this is like it's part of my life when I can make decisions.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you and I connect.
Well, then it doesn't have to be either or.
No.
This is the beauty of it, right? This is an opportunity to have that social experience, have that beer. Like have a beer that tastes like a beer that's good, that you like it, you enjoy it. It doesn't have those restrictions and limitations. And when it's appropriate to have the ones with alcohol, have the ones with alcohol. Like,
I'm
so great.
And the reason I love both, just because I'm a grown-up, can make good decisions, right? I love, I can control, which... yeah, that's why I really,
yeah,
this is cool. And when we did crack that one, I was like, oh, this is really good too. So
yeah.
I end the show with one question.
Yeah.
When I say Calgary, where's your head go?
So I've heard you ask a number of people this.
Yeah, 105 times.
And shockingly, the funniest thing was that, what's the girl you work with?
Emma.
You asked her and she didn't have an answer. Mm-hmm. I was like, mm-hmm. She's heard that 99 times mm-hmm. going up to then, mm-hmm. right? So I did have to think about it, right? Because when someone's like, where are you from to me? I'm like, oh, I'm Saskatoon.
Yep.
Like I haven't lived there in 25 years mm-hmm. almost, right? So am I still from there? But I feel like I'm always from there. So like I think of Calgary, my kids grew up in Calgary. Like, but what's my, like I had businesses here. Like I love it. I enjoy it. I love where it is, what it brings me. Like it's awesome. But someone says, where's home? Home's still Saskatchewan in some mm-hmm. crazy way. So I'm like, what do I love about it? And what I love about it is this community, I think, mm. right? Like it's broken up that way. It's like, what quadrant do you live in? That means something, right? Mm-hmm. There's a correlated feeling to the Northeast, the Northwest, Southwest, Southeast, yep. for sure, yep. right? And then you break it down further and like where we live in Brentwood or we live in the Northwest Warriors Hockey Association, mm-hmm. whatever, right? Mm-hmm. It's these communities inside that are so small town-like
yep.
that remind me of Saskatoon, mm. right? So I think in that way, it's small town, almost home.
Mm. Amazing. Never heard it before. thanks for taking the time.
And I appreciate it. Anytime.
Yeah. Really yeah, cool. Yeah. Shout out to Megan again. She was, she did this intro. Megan sent me an email like months ago. Mm-hmm. Just like, would you think about having this guy on your show? And I said, yeah, it looks interesting. And then anyways, it plays out like months later. So
yeah,
I'm glad she started this all.
She's a good person.
Agreed. Thanks once again.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.